Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to dedicate my words today to Marianne and Hildy. Marianne is Michael's mom, and Hildy was my mom. And both of those moms passed away in this year. And there is a fig tree in the Jokoji Garden, also dedicated to them. So, whatever merit these words have to our moms. We just finished a sesshin here at Jokoji, and we looked at a passage from Hongzhi over the course of the week. And I was very moved by the last lines of this little prose poem. And those lines are, "With thoughts clear, sitting silently, wander into the center of the circle of wonder. This is how you must penetrate and study." Here it is. This is the circle of wonder. And I suspect that we have all wandered here into this circle together to meet. For a long time, I thought I was wandering into Zen practice in order to figure something out. I'm going to sit there, figure it out. Quiet. It'll all get clear. I'll understand why these things happen to me, why I'm like this, why I keep doing this over and over and over again. I'll figure it out. And I think Hongzhi is correct, that we wander into this circle not to have this aha moment, but to have this what moment? Huh? This moment of wonder. This circle of wonder. This is sort of, I think, what happens when someone is given a koan. I suspect that the koan is solved the moment the person hears moo and they go, "What? That's it? What? Huh?" So I suspect that most of you are kind of like me. We didn't plan on doing Zen practice. We didn't sit down and say, "Well, I think I'm going to start doing Zen practice because X, Y, and Z." But somehow we wandered into it. Kind of wandering in this circle. Some of us just get tired of wandering back. And so we just have to sit down because we're just so tired of trying to figure everything out. Just exhausted. Or we they're so confused, so lost in thought that we can't move. We're just paralyzed, so sit. Or perhaps the winds of circumstance just go, just pushing us and throwing us around, and we just like grab for the cushion for some stability. But most of this isn't planned. It's just, here I am. I've landed. Come in for a landing. I remember Michael talking about Kobin's teaching of Gassho. All the dualities come together. Right and wrong and left and right and man and woman and good and bad. Right. Past and future, right here. But when we sit down on our cushion, this is Gassho. This is Gassho too. It's like coming together of your bottom and the world's top. Shikantaza. There's a fit. There's a fit. People say, when I sit, it feels right. It feels right. It's right. There's a fit between you and the world. There's no duality. And as you and the world come together, right here, right now, everything sits with you. Just think of how many meetings like this there are in this vast universe. Gashas. A bird lands on a branch. Rain falls on a stone. A golf club hits a golf ball. A cup of tea. Yeah, Gassho. Yeah. A baby gets set in a crib. Gassho. Gassho. Pet a chicken. A cat. A dog. Gassho. Meetings. 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 One night my dog sleeps in a little tuffet next to my bed. And I got up in the middle of the night one night and I just kind of reached out. Like they say in Zen, you know, it's reaching out for your pillow in the middle of the night. That's that moment. And I just happened to reach out and touched her paw. And I was half asleep, and it was no separation. This meeting of paw and hand. Just one. All over the universe, this is happening. This touching, touching, touching. Sitting with us. Sit. So, what is this Gassho, this meeting, this coming together? In our practice, we actually practice meeting, I think, all the time. Giving something our attention. meeting something with our attention. It's almost as if when the eyes meet, there's a landing. It's visceral. It's like physical. It's meeting you, touching, even with the eyes. And there are many ways of touching, meeting. And this is what we practice, you know. We come in here and touch, turn the knob on the door. We come in, gasha. The han, touching, meeting, present every minute, every strike. Meeting, attentive. Incense. Michael says, don't hold the incense down here. Touch it up here. Touch it up here. Touch it. The incense touching the sand. Gosh. Rain falling on the sand. Gosh. So, sitting on the cushion. The bell. Hit meeting. Meeting. Right. And the attention flows through your arm into the striker, meeting the bell. Moments of wonder. Nothing to figure out. Just wow. So we practice this, meeting the world, allowing that separation to fall apart, to fall away, fall away, fall away, coming together. We do this together here. Such a rare gift to be able to come together, to meet here. And to wonder together, to sit in wonder together about this moment. Of course, this is the season of wonder. Every season is wondrous, but this is kind of especially wondrous. And I was looking at the daffodils at Chikoji, and you know, daffodils are very delicate flowers. You just really have to touch them a little bit, and they don't last that long. But you know, watching them come up, watching any like perennial come up or something that has died and it's gone, and then in the spring. You see this little shoot coming up. And the earth is full of leaves and mud, and it's, you know, it's really heavy. The ground is very heavy. And yet this little delicate thing starts rising up. And I mean, I'm just astounded. I mean, you take a broccoli seed, this little tiny little thing, stick it in there. Whoa, how did that happen? How did this broccoli plant come out of this? And then, of course, we eat it, and it's just wander into the circle of wonder. So I watch these little shoots coming up, and I say, how does that daffodil do that? How does that daffodil just kind of push its way up through this incredibly dense, heavy, muddy muck? Well, it's pretty clear to me that it can't do it by itself. It No way. The whole universe has to be blossoming for that to happen. There's no way that that can happen by itself. And so when we sit, we bloom, and the whole universe blooms with us. We can't do it alone. Nothing in this universe can do it alone. Everything rises up with that daffodil. Well, that's lovely. But sometimes we wander into this circle and we sit down and we sit down on something that hurts. Ouch! It's not as pretty as the daffodil. It hurts. And we meet something that hurts. Painful. And when my mother died in December, I sat with that pain. It hurt. I had a picture of her as a young woman, stunningly beautiful. I had a picture of her a few months before she died, totally transformed, a very old lady, almost skeletal in sight. And then next to that were her ashes. And I drove home, where I would typically be driving her home from the supermarket in the passenger seat. Instead, there was a box of ashes in the passenger seat. And I looked at these. Painful. Nothing. We're nothing. She's gone. But you know, how does something meet nothing? Life, death. Gosho! No separation. It's wondrous. Mom. Nothing. Still painful, but wondrous. Amazing. Now something meets nothing. To be present to these wonders, even though they are painful. And to experience them as wondrous. To sit with that, to be with that. Sort of, there's no explanation there. There's nothing to figure out. It's nothing to figure out. It's just something to go, what? And be dumbstruck. So this is the reality, at least, as I am experiencing it now. And there's a... has anybody heard of ventriloquist, Edgar Bergen? Have you heard of him? Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy is this little... His puppet, marionette, or dummy. Anybody here? Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy? Yeah, I'm dating myself. this is an interesting story about they were on tour. He was a performer. He was a ventriloquist, and he had Charlie McCarthy, and they would have a routine. And one day, one of the script writers for this performance happened to be passing the hotel room where Edgar Bergen was staying. And the door, he was delivering a script, and the door to the room was slightly open. And as he approached the door, he heard this conversation going on in the room. He peeked in, and he saw Edgar Bergen talking to Charlie McCarthy, having this profound philosophical conversation about life and death, and truth and beauty and goodness, and they were just really deep. And so the scriptwriter stood there and he went, he just like wanted to let Edgar Bergen know he was there, and he wanted to come in, and so come on in. Scriptwriter went in, and he said, "Ed, what's going on here?" And Edgar Bergen said, "Well, I'm talking to Charlie." And the scriptwriter said, "Well, you're having this amazing conversation, and this isn't Charlie, Ed. This is you, Edward says, "I know that, but you know something? I often have these conversations with Charlie. I never know what Charlie is going to say. I ask him all the questions that have been bothering me all my life, and I am repeatedly astounded at Charlie's brilliance, Charlie's brilliant answers." And so I keep talking to him. So I think, we've got this dummy in us. A wise dummy. We need to talk to this dummy. Ask the dummy. Ask the dumb one. The dumbstruck one. And listen to the dummy speak. Because the dummy is in touch with wonder. The dummy lives in the circle of wonder and can speak out of that. I'm trying to speak out of that today. It's problematic how to do that. How do we live our lives and speak to each other and meet each other out of this wonder? How do we come together? How do we meet and speak? It's interesting. We were having lunch the other day, and Michael was saying that when people have conversations, it's more important that they meet than anything that they have to say. That the content of the conversation is much less significant than the feeling of meeting. And that's why, it's a good explanation for small talk, because you don't want to talk about stuff that's too heady, because it might interfere with your meeting. So you talk about simple things, so you don't get too drawn into concepts, and you can meet in this circle of wonder more easily. Just have a sense of each other. And then it occurred to me that even better than that would be not to say anything. So that you can really meet. And this is exactly what we do here. We sit together, silently, so we can meet each other. And we can meet the world. Akasha.
Thank you. Some time for questions, is any?
Experiences of similar sort.
Something to share.
Something to share.
That was beautiful. Thank you. I really saw the sense of coming together and connection, which happens every day. But for some reason, I wasn't aware of it. And it just put into a new perspective. Every time I touch something, I say something, my vibration of my voice touching someone's ear, that's Gosho. Mm-hmm. See light, that's Gosho. Mm-hmm. It's Gosho every moment. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And Buddha's speaking about right speech. This one of the four marks of right speech is kindness. That your speech should be kind. I think it's true, kind, helpful, and timely. But this kindness maybe is the most important one. I'm not sure. But when you spoke about the vibration, your voice coming and touching somebody else's receptors, you know how it feels to be touched by a kind voice. Mm-hmm. Kind voice. Just somebody speaking with a kind voice can be so comforting. And you feel as if you're being touched by that voice. So thank you for that.
I certainly experienced that as Alex's first time here. He's kind of wondering what's going on. He's trying to be very patient, and you guys are holding him.
Do you feel that? Good.
I have a question. Is the topic of meeting, come to meet, when we, in this tradition, when we sit down, we face a wall. We come to the wall and meet the wall. So when we come to, my question is, when we come to the wall, what do we meet? Who do we meet?
Your question was, what do we meet? Who do we meet? And there's your answer.
Good. Thank you.
Do you feel met by my answer?
Sometimes it's like knocking my head against the wall.
Sometimes meetings are not comfortable, but they're still wondrous. Do you know, I was trying to think of the opposite of wonder, and I couldn't. I think wonder is absolutely fundamental. It's... Can you think of the opposite? Oh, no. Go ahead.
I would say asleep. Unaware.
Unaware. Okay.
Because if you're awake, then everything is wondrous. If you look at it closely enough. So the unconscious would be unwondrous.
Unconscious? Mm-hmm.
Just a thought.
Yeah, thank you.
I have a question. When you sit that down,
it's okay. It's really okay. We're meeting you. We're with you. And nobody ever cries alone.
I have a question. Could the opposite of wonder would be denial or ignorance?
Sort of the same, in the same spirit, that is, when you're at, when you're present, when you're open, when you're not in resistance, you're amazed at what is. Yeah. Thanks.
The moment that you saw your mom ashes, you had that connection.
Yes.
So I was waiting for the next phase, which is what is after it? Okay, is she gonna be connecting to somewhere, or like what's gonna happen after that part? That you're nothing.
I don't know. I am sitting with that. I'm sitting with her ashes. And I don't know what's going to happen. I wish I did. Well, I don't know whether I wish I did or not, but I'm not ready yet to do that next thing. So I think sometimes when something that powerful happens, when something becomes nothing, when there is this huge loss, the tendency is to make something happen. What's next? Okay, you know, like the Twin Towers. I often like to use the Twin Towers as a metaphor for... Everyone's got them, you know, those twin towers that inevitably are going to crash. You know, what are your twin towers? You know, they're going to crash. Everything that holds you steady, holds you up, that you think, you know, you're absolutely relying on. Nothing. That's something that looks so huge and so permanent is going to fall. And, of course, the inclination is immediately to rebuild. You know, okay, how do we clean up the rubble and get this contract out to build new, better building, you know, better, more stronger building, you know. So this practice is, for me, about dwelling in the rubble for a while. Dwelling with those ashes, just being with it until whatever unfolds presents itself, instead of this push for reconstruction very quickly. You know, your question, what's next? What's next? And it's that. We are not used to dwelling in this circle of wonder. And that's why we practice. Because here we learn how to dwell and abide in that without having to know what's next. I don't know. I'm just staying with it right now. Still in amazement. I'm still in shock. An American poet I love quite a bit, Mary Oliver, was asked what she wants for her epitaph. And she said, I wanted to read, she was a bride married to amazement. That's how I feel.
Yes. Question.
Sure.
Is there a Buddhist practice where people actually just sit and like be with each other, like meet, as you say? I was wondering if there is a, because I think it would be nice if there was. I don't know of any. Rather than talking, as you said, and that kind of disturbs the meeting.
You mean this isn't it? there's something else? You mean something outside of the Zendo or some?
I don't know what prompted the question. I mean, I know when there's a interview with the teacher, you sit facing each other,
mm-hmm.
and there's something very intimate about it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's just silence. But I also mean just like looking at someone's face, like having the eye contact. There's something. We don't seem to do that too much in Buddhism, and I don't know. I don't.
Interesting idea, huh? Let's try it.
Let's try it.
Yeah. We're talking about playing the harmonica together, putting everybody in the Zendo harmonicas. But yeah.
Face off.
Many, many, many ways of meeting. Mm. Many ways of meeting beyond the eyes, of course, are really seem to be the most sensitive, and somehow you feel touched deeply when someone looks at you.
Yeah.
But also, and I think many of our other senses are not very well developed. But I think touching, Thich Nhat Hanh, when he first came to this country, he noticed that when he would leave after his retreats and sesshin, a bunch of old ladies would take him to the airplane and want to give him hugs.
Yeah.
And of course, being Asian, this wasn't a particularly familiar practice for him. So he would, you know, all these, like me, you know, old ladies would want to come and, because he was cute and wanted to give him a hug. And he realized, and he was very stiff, and he realized this wasn't really, they weren't meeting. That they were giving him a hug, but he was not.
Mm.
And he decided that he was going to practice hugging.
Ah.
There's a practice. And at one retreat that I went to with him, we had hugging meditation. And it was extraordinary. I mean, it had three phases to it. The first phase was embracing somebody and feeling I have you in my arms. This moment is so special. We are together, we are connecting, we are touching, we are one. Okay, that's the first phase. Part. And the second phase, again, hug. This moment is so intimate, so wonderful, our connection is so deep. I may never see you again. This is the added. I may never see you again. That changes things a bit. Yeah. Separate. Breathe. Phase three. Come to me. This is precious moment, present moment. I will never see you. This moment is it. Very different. And that is the truth. I may never see. This may be the last time we will ever have a chance to touch. So, profound. Not the eyes, but touching. Kind word. Even someone's fragrance can touch you and connect with you. But these are senses that I think as we sit, we can become more and more present to the range of meetings that we can have. And it always astounds me how sitting a week of sesshin, where there's no talking, there is a profound bond that is created between people. So we begin to develop and refine our all of our antennae, every sense and every aspect of who we are, so that we can meet the world and meet others on every level, become present. Gosho. This is the whole hand, not just the mind, the whole thing, the whole being. And this is the whole universe comes to meet together.
And then a certain time, we have to meet this thing called lunch.
Yes. I hope that we all have the most incredibly delicious connection with every morsel of food today, which I know is prepared with this anticipation of meeting.